The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 940. It's the 4th of December, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vesarion, VRS. And Neil discusses their agreement with a Fortune 100 global chemical company to use Vesarion's proprietary nanine fuel layer graphene nanoplatelets. And Neil was on Friday, but like I said, there's lots of news in the pipeline, and this dropped this morning. Excellent new contract collaboration agreement with them. Okay, also on the podcast today, it's Malky, of course, Oil and Gas Sector Authority, talking about Sound Energy, Range Resources, Victoria Oil and Gas, Rio Bowl Resources, Upland Resources, and Janelle Energy, or Gennel, G-E-N-L, the ticker there. Plus, I also have market analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talking about companies releasing updates this week, including Stagecoach Group, Smiths Group, and Barclay Group. Also on the podcast, I have, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. And I'll give you a clue. Number one in both sections is the same company, and it's the same company I have on the podcast today.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vesarion. VRS is ticker. Neil, how are you doing, fella?
Good morning. Yeah, it's a great morning. Great morning.
Yeah, it's like we were talking 5 minutes ago because you were on Friday's podcast talking about the interims, and you say news is imminent. I didn't realise it was that close. But excellent. You've released amazing RNS today, and we'll get that in a bit. Before we do, as always, I like to do this. I know you've only just been on, but there are people tuning in all the time. And so for them, Neil, give them a brief summary of what Vesarion is all about, please. What's the company about?
Sure. This is an advanced materials company that I started in 2011. We've been growing very, very quickly. We floated on the AIM stock exchange 2013, and then we acquired two graphene businesses out of the University of Manchester and the University of Cambridge. Since then, we've been developing this technology, and we're in a situation now where, as today, we can announce that we're working with some of the largest companies in the world.
Yes. Well, you've signed that way. You had a collaboration with a global sort of brand recently, and with an Israeli aerospace company. So, and now this one, the partner, a Fortune 100 company. I like these because obviously you're not allowed to reveal who they are, but I quite like the fact that, it's a guessing game. But the fact is, they're in a Fortune 100 company, which means they're a mega company. So go on.
It doesn't get any better than this, Justin. I mean, when you're the CEO of a company, I've run a few companies before. These kind of things, you kind of don't think happen to ordinary companies like ours. And here we are, one of the largest companies in the world, knocking at the door of our Cheltenham HQ, asking us to work with them. What a fantastic indication of the potential this business has, that we can attract the attention of these mega companies, as you said.
Yeah, agreement with a global chemical major, whether it's the head. So explain what this collaboration means, what you're doing together, Neil.
Well, I mean, as we've spoken about on Friday, we're in a unique situation that we have this material, which is now sort of quantified and verified and certified, using this independent data, and it's attracted the attention of these very large companies. And this particular agreement is extremely far-reaching. It has massive implications for a lot of the products that your readers and listeners will be using on a day-to-day basis. In terms of the significance of this, I spoke on Friday about these deals being transformational, the opportunities, and we still have a lot of work to do. There's no getting away from the fact that this isn't a done deal yet, but what a massive opportunity for this small British company to get onto the center stage of the world.
Yeah, exactly. And how did you meet these guys then? What happened? Obviously you can't reveal who they are, but how did you meet these?
Well, we always talk about the fantastic links we've got with central government and with the various government bodies, the Department of International Trade in this particular case organized a meeting out in Brazil, and one of the in the audience whilst I was doing a speaking slot was a representative from this large chemicals company. And we got talking, and it was obvious that that we had a lot of a lot of interest or aligned interest, should we say. And as a result of that, it's taken us a while. These things don't happen overnight, unfortunately. They take a lot of work and it takes a lot of patience. But here we are, you know, dealing with their American HQ from that initial, you know, meeting, which had an element of luck in it.
Yeah, so now you've got a global consumer brand you're collaborating with, a global chemical company, a Fortune 100 company, that is, the Israeli aerospace industry there. And so can you take on any more? Is there any more in the pipeline? Are you likely to be releasing any more news before Christmas or not?
I'd love to be able to say that we were taking December off and that it was going to be feet up on the table and a few Christmas parties, but unfortunately we've cancelled them and it's head down. Guys have been in Europe all this week making material, and there doesn't seem to be an end to it at the moment, which is, you know, a fantastic situation to be in. I did promise your readers that they would or your listeners that they would have a good Christmas, and I'm hoping that this will contribute a long way towards that. But in no way have we opened all the doors on the advent calendar yet. And although we can't guarantee anything, it's always out of our control, we're working extremely hard to follow this up.
Yeah, but the thing is, like I've said before, once you start become the market leader, which you are, because for a while I was looking to get exposure to a graphene company, and I was, you know, and I looked at your links with Manchester, of course, the creators of graphene, and Cambridge, they're also leading research in graphene. And now, though, it's snowballing, isn't it? Would it have this effect of you, because you are attracting these companies, more big companies will look you up, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, that is exactly the situation we find ourselves in. The other thing is, if you're a very large brand, you know, it takes you a long time to get comfortable that that we're a company to deal with. And we've gone a long way in making sure that we have a very creditable story. We have all of our data independently checked. We have these massive relationships with the government bodies. We have this £1 billion worth of assets around us that we didn't buy, that were, you know, that we have access to. And that means an awful lot to these big companies. The thing that that your listeners will find interesting is that all of these releases that we've announced more recently are all related to our Nanine product, which, as you know, is a derivative of graphene. It's a very high quality graphene. And we're starting to see significant interest in our other products now, including the inks and so on. So, you know, we're not a one-trick pony. We have multiple strands going. The team is stretched. We're working really, really hard. We're delivering good shareholder value. The share price is reacting to the good sentiment that's out there. We're going to kind of continue with that. And as I said, you know, we're not done yet. We've got huge opportunities in front of us, and we'll be working hard to ensure that those opportunities are delivered just as quickly as we can.
Yeah, I mean, share price, you know, hitting close to all-time highs on Friday, and almost four times the average daily volume, and that's on a volume that's been increasing over the last few weeks, so it's doing very well.
Yeah, Friday was a good day for us. We smashed our highest ever valuation when the share price went through 60p, and it did fall back a little bit towards the end of the day, but that's what you would expect, you know. We're there to, you know, the market serves a purpose, and we don't hold that, you know, from anybody. But, you know, again, what a fantastic situation to be in, where a couple of guys in the garage started a business 6 years ago, and now, you know, that business has a market cap of 60 or 70 million pounds.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. Well done, Neil. And listen, if anyone's listening to this right now and they're still not following the story on Vox Markets, of course, it's never too late. I mean, the graphene world has only just started. It's in its infancy, the world of Nanine, I should say, your branded graphene there. If they're not following the story yet, give them three quick reasons, Neil, why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
Not a problem, Justin. I mean, this is getting easier and easier to do. The first thing is that we are able to demonstrate that we have significant traction in this brand new science of two-dimensional materials. The second thing is that we're not a one-trick pony, that we have multiple strands running in multiple sectors, which means that the risk for our shareholders is greatly reduced. And the third thing is that, as we always talk about, you know, I have significant skin in the game and my interests are heavily aligned to those of the shareholders. And that means that we want to generate good shareholder value. We are recently announced results show that we don't waste money. We use our money very, very efficiently, and that we are starting to see a significant increase in our market cap as a result of all of that really, really good sentiment.
Marvellous, Neil, and I said this on Friday, but I said, listen, you know, you sound very busy, so hopefully we'll chat in the not-too-distant future, and I don't mind if it's tomorrow, but listen, I didn't expect it to be, you know, on Monday after Friday, but hopefully, Neil, we'll chat again very soon. Thank you very much for chatting to me.
Thank you very much, Justin. Always a pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, it's Malky Oil and Gas Sector Authority. All right, fella?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks, Justin. And you?
Yes, very good. And good. Some of the stocks I'm holding today are looking quite buoyant, the market, so I'm quite happy with that. So what are we chatting about, Malky, today?
Well, there's always lots going on. I'm going to have a quick word about Range Resources, who will be back soon. Very quick word there, and on Victoria Oil and Gas. I want to talk about, briefly about Rare Bold Resources and Upland, mm-hmm. and Sound Energy briefly, and of course, I might have a short word about one or two other stocks, but those are my key plays today, and Gunnell Energy.
Okay, well, let's start off with, who are we starting off with?
Well, why don't we have a quick, I'll mention Sound Energy, because they put... a very interesting announcement out last week. This is the volume estimates for their Sidi Mokhtar acreage in Morocco, mm-hmm. Which were pretty high. And the potential for this is very good. You know, Sound, now having divested its Italian acreage, is clearly a Morocco gas play. With both sides of Morocco, one side of Tendrara and the other side being Sidi Mokhtar. If the numbers were to come in on very preliminary volume estimates at Sidi Mokhtar, they've got the pre-salt play there, which would be very interesting indeed. So just one to flag, watch out for Sound. Nice. And investors should remember that tomorrow night, and where I'm involved a bit, is that... the Sound Energy and Echo and the Coro gang are all presenting tomorrow evening for retail, which will be most interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. What's the next one, Malky?
Well, Range Resources finally announced that the shareholder approval had gone through for the drilling company in Trinidad. So the good news for very long-suffering Range Resources shareholders is that I expect suspension to be lifted. Well, it's not suspension, it'll be a new listing, effectively, of Range on the London market in about 2 weeks' time. So expect quick good news for at least long-serving Range Resources shareholders.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, and the next, Malky.
Victoria Oil and Gas, which is interesting in the sense that this stock is massively undervalued in my view, and having had a peak earlier in the year, has, like one or two other stocks in the sector, just been unable to get people interested despite the recent rise in the oil price. They announced on Friday last week that their LA108 well in Log Barber in their Cameroon acreage had completed after a short delay, but it's flow testing already and will be in production in December. So more gas coming on stream for Victoria, which will be easily sold. The market is desperately short of well-priced gas. They're the only people that can supply it at the moment, so they're supplying to the government power generators, plus a whole bunch of industrial players as well. So I expect things to pick up nicely for Victoria Oil and Gas.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous, that's a VOG. And the next, Malky.
And the next is Rheobald Resources, which, as you know, I picked up on, I think, pretty early doors. And I think retail should be very, very interested in this stock. There are two things I want to mention here. First of all, today's announcement, where they've announced a £1.5 million investment for a 29% stake in a company called Danube Petroleum. Mm-hmm. This is a very interesting deal because they... the Danube has 50% of the PATA license onshore Romania. Mm-hmm. This is, in essence, a very low-risk gas appraisal with two wells to be drilled next year, which might be 33 BCF of prospective gas resources. But more importantly, this de-risks the whole area. And there was an oil-producing field here before it was shut in. So there's potential upside, and this is exceptionally good news for Rheobald. But Rheobald had even more good news last week. The deal I mentioned about Uphol, Upland is concerned, it effectively has bought into the Wick prospect. If you remember, Rheobald was interesting because they bought the Karelian interest, which is for the acreage near Witch Farm.
Yeah.
And as far as Rheobald are concerned, the Wick part of it was effectively in for nothing. Mm-hmm. Now, this Upland acquisition, if it goes through, will frank some value on Wick, which was no way in the share price for Rheobald. So I can only see upside in this whole bang shoot. I've spoken to Steve Williams of Rheobald already this morning, and he's very positive. I'm going to speak to him at length tomorrow. I'm away all day today and first thing tomorrow. I'm going to speak to him at length tomorrow, and I will write something more. But the retail should remain very excited about Rheobald, which will be a very big player, I suspect, in the future.
Yeah, well, I've seen the interest in Rheobald, and of course it's a new stock. I know more about Upland because I do hold a bit of stock, and I've had Dr. Steve Staley on the podcast a couple of times. I've written a blog, in fact, on my last blog, just covered that deal. But it was interesting because they've got very good connections, Upland, in sort of Morocco, North Africa, and Sarawak in Malaysia.
Well, yeah.
And they've got this two-tier strategy of building very sensible sort of near or low-risk sort of cash-generating assets to underpin a second-phase strategy, which is more blue-sky potential, higher risk. And so for the last year, I think it was this time last year, Steve's on the podcast saying, listen, we're hoping news on North Africa or the Far East is going to be, you know, around the corner very soon. And literally, it hasn't delivered. But yet he's delivered this deal now on Wick. And so that's a surprise one. But this. And we asked him on the podcast last week, I said, is it still ongoing in North Africa and Sarawak? He says, yes, it is. And so it could be a further two bits of news coming very soon because they're way overdue. And if you look at the shareholder register, some of the guys there, or directors from Malaysia, have huge amounts of skin in the game. So there's something very interesting. So they could have, right? they got Wrestle, they got part of Wrestle, they got part of Hardstoft, they've now got, that's their phase one strategy, they've now got the Wick, which is phase two strategy. But you could have two further assets coming in very soon on phase two strategy. So, you know, it's a lot for a company this sub 5 million market cap, you know, so it's very interesting. So, and now with Rheobald in this as well. So, yeah, interesting. So, worth keeping an eye on.
I spoke with Steve Staley last week, and I'm going to have another long chat with him tomorrow.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy. And do you know what? He's he really is. His major is due diligence. He doesn't rush into anything.
Yeah.
He makes sure it's correct. The risk-reward ratio is right. And so he's a bit of a stickler on that. So it's I quite like Steve. I like what they're doing there.
Yeah.
cool. What's next, Malky?
And finally, I wanted to mention Genel Energy, which I haven't mentioned much lately because it's been a very mixed year or two for Genel, but there's new management in place. I've mentioned them once or twice on that front. Their major problem in the last couple of years has been the down grades in reserves and production at their Taktak field in Kurdistan. But today, for the first time for a long time, it's nice to see some real good news in the statement here. The free water level is at least 145 metres lower than their previous working assumptions. So depending on how the numbers work out, and obviously, you know, it has to be put in context, given that the overall field design decline has been quite substantial. It's nice to see some good news for once with Taktak. And as I said, with the gas prospects and, you know, and the change in the, as I say, change in the management coming through, I would suggest that Genel is one to start looking at again. And they've had a big rise in the share price as a couple of big players came onto the shareholder list. Again, I'm going to have a long chat with the company tomorrow, and I'll write something more substantial. But I think Genel looks quite interesting at the moment. At the moment, Justin.
Well, do you know what? I think I don't know if it's me, but I do think this the oil and gas sector is a lot more buoyant of late. There's a lot more positivity around it.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've seen nothing but companies coming up with interesting stories right across the board, and I don't think it's been reflected in the share prices yet. I think there's quite a substantial upside still to come.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, Matt, is that it? Because we covered a heck of a lot there.
Yeah, I think we covered a lot there.
I've written it down. Sound Energy, Range Resources, Victoria Oil and Gas, Rehoboth Resources, Upland Resources, Genel Energy. Marvellous stuff. Marky, have a nice week, and we'll speak next week, fella.
Yeah, looking forward to it, Justin. Have a good week.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is market analyst with Spreadex. It's Connor Campbell. You all right, Connor?
I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent stuff. And just to introduce people, our listeners there, Connor talks about stocks, biggest stocks that are releasing news this week. So what's the first one up, Connor?
We've got Stagecoach. Stagecoach is reporting tomorrow. Obviously, they, you know, multiple rail sort of franchises, bus franchises, things like that. Really not, up until very, very specifically recently, have been not doing very good at all. I think it hit 8-year lows in mid-September. Sort of just not a lot of good news around the stock really at all. Full year figures in June, I think due to one-off costs and impairment charges, mainly related to the East Coast Rail franchise, which it, I think Stagecoach owns 90% of it and Virgin owns 10% of it. And we'll talk about more about that in a minute. I think because of charges related to that franchise, pre-tax profit plunged something like 83% to 17.9 million. And even when those charges are stripped out, the figure wasn't great. But like pre-tax profit was still down 15% to 158.7 million. So really not good stuff in June. Then in September, first quarter figures in September, there were a few highlights, like-for-like UK rail sales, but excluding Southwest Trains, which the contract for that was lost back in March. They jumped 3.8%. Virgin Rail Group, which Stagecoach owns 49% of, like-for-like sales there jumped 3.8%. However, like-for-like bus revenue in London was down 0.1% and down 0.4% across the rest of the country. So again, like those sort of the bus like-for-likes sort of overshadowed really the decent growth in the rail division. However, last week, the stock saw a huge, I think it jumped like 13% or something, after the Department for Transport announced its new direction, like the way it was going to overhaul the UK's railways. The main focus here was that the Department for Transport said it was going to start a joint public and private sector East Coast partnership from 2020, which means that the East Coast Rail franchise contract that Stagecoach currently has will end 3 years earlier, so will end in 2020 instead of 2023, which, given the amount of trouble Stagecoach has had with that franchise, and I think a lot of its last few updates have been saying that, you know, we're in discussions with the Department of Transport for what we're going to do about the contract. I think Stagecoach felt that they'd overpaid for the contract and it wasn't actually as profitable or valuable as, you know, initially stated when it first went in, you know, when it first bid for the contract a few years ago. So that news, I think investors were just sort of relieved that sooner rather than later, the franchise will not necessarily be completely out of Stagecoach's hands, but it won't have to carry the burden of it so much. Also, I think it was put on the short list for the to run the HS2 high speed rail link. So again, that's another, you know, potentially lucrative contract that can make up for, say, for example, the Southwest franchise it lost earlier in the year. So that, you know, decent news shows how desperately sort of investors were looking for some kind of signs of relief, just how sharply the company jumped on that news. In terms of its half-year figures on Wednesday, then I think ideally, you know, it needs to have seen some kind of turnaround in the bus division in the second quarter of the year. Mm-hmm. I think it's now also in danger that it's expended so much energy on that Department of Transport update and the growth it's seen there that it could sort of pull back once investors get a look at its half-year figures again on Wednesday. But we had seen people buying around the lows, but then since it hit the 180 mark, our clients have started to sell again, I think, perhaps anticipating it pulling back on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's a bit of a downtime, isn't it? And a little bit of a spike up, but it's in a downtrend. But that spike up didn't hit their 200-day moving average, which is also seen as a generic sort of technical indicator for bullish or bearish. Above that, of course, bullish, below bearish. But yeah, it in fact, the spike hit his head on it and didn't like it and fell back. It's obviously almost knocked it out. So there we go. Cool. What else is next, Connor?
We've got D.S. Smith, on Thursday.
Yep.
You know, announced recently one of the next inductees to the FTSE 100. I think it's sort of taken Merlin Entertainment's place. Not a particularly flashy company. You know, it's packaging, cardboard packaging, things like that. But its figures are very, very strong. Full year figures back in June, revenue was 18% higher to $4.78 billion. Pre-tax profit surged 31% to $264 million, and then in June it sort of complemented those already stellar figures by announcing it bought an 80% stake in Interstate Resources, which is a paper and corrugated packaging firm, for $722 million, with an option in 5 years' time to buy the other 20%. Now this is important because it's sort of D.S. Smith's first steps into America. You know, and investors were, you know, overjoyed that it was taking those steps. It seems well positioned to do so given the strength of its sort of revenue growth in Europe. September, again, sort of more generic statements, but it said it had an encouraging start to the year and that the progress with its sort of pan-European and e-commerce customers was particularly strong. October continued that same theme, said that volume growth had been consistently very strong throughout the first half of the year, and it said that I think in mid-October it had bought EcoPack and EcoPaper in Romania. Mm-hmm. And said it would complete the acquisition of those sometime in the third quarter. So, you know, acquisition-hungry company, doing very strong. Obviously, it has been rewarded with that, with being stuck in with the FTSE 100. I think investors are just going to want to see the same kind of sort of double-digit revenue and profit growth they saw back in June. Obviously, the profit might be a bit lower due to the sort of buying... the buying of Interstate Resources. I think also investors are going to hear, well, how much has Interstate Resources contributed over that first half of the year? How well are the company integrating that sort of new acquisition into the wider business? You know, how much, you know, how has it justified sort of that $722 million price tag? It's interesting as well because it's at all-time highs, or just off of all-time highs, around like 540. But we've still seen our clients really heavily buying into the stock at that level. You know, there is room for it to pull back just because of how sharply it's climbed, especially since June, like June onwards. But our clients, they're really on board with the stock. I think they're very impressed with the strength of its figures, and that's why they've still been buying in despite its current highs.
Excellent stuff. And yeah, you say it's not sexy. Look at the share price, and that's sexy enough. You know, it's just gradually rise, nice little uptrend there, and. But 560 looks like what it'd be interesting to see if it gets over that, because it tried to get over that twice, two trading days, and failed. Not a massive amount of resistance, but we'll see. And anything else, Connor?
Yeah, finally, we've got Berkeley Group on Friday, you know, big old house building stock. Yes. Again, very impressive figures, full-year figures in June, 53% surge in pre-tax profit, which is massive, especially since that pre-tax profit is now $112.4 million. Revenue is up 33% to $2.7 billion. However, there have been like a few warning signs around the story. Like, it still hit, I think, an all-time high. I think it was at the end of October. But since then, there have been stuff like, I think, two senior execs sold like more than 1 million worth, like more than 1 million shares. Like they made like £50 million or something. But that dragged it lower. Then there was a downgrade from brokers at Barclays. I think they said that expectations may have run ahead of themselves in the sector as a whole. I think there was another downgrade by Deutsche Bank at the end of November, specifically for Berkeley, not just for the sector as a whole. Then the autumn budget, despite sort of Philip Hammond pledging, I think it what amounted to like £44 billion in terms of pledges surrounding the housing sector, including axing stamp duty for first time buyers on properties up to £300,000, pledging to build 300,000. Properties a year by the mid 2020s. That sort of, he spoiled that by claiming that the government might introduce sort of compulsory purchase powers that, you know, to bring back land that developers aren't building on due to commercial rather than sort of technical or practical reasons. So that sort of spoiled sort of the bumper housing announcement. Also, there's been plenty of doubt cast on the measures that Hammond announced, especially the stamp duty thing, saying that any benefits to first-time buyers will be negated by the sort of the rise in house prices it causes. Also, that it's got issues in London, Brexit and previously the stamp duty issues weighing on the London housing market. However, it still sounded pretty confident overall in each of its recent updates. It says it's still on track to deliver around like I think it's £3 billion in profit total in the 5 years to the end of April 2021. Obviously, it's proving that you can do that with its sort of giant jump in pre-tax profit, like 4 year pre-tax profit back in June. So I think it's seen a bit of a dip in the last month or so, basically across November. But I think our clients are still largely buying around the sort of the £37.50 mark, £38 mark, looking, if it can post similar figures, like similar figures to what it did in June, then there's no reason why it can't shoot back to the highs it saw at the end of October.
Yeah, more so speaking. Yeah, exactly. There is that worry hanging over the housing sector, I suppose, whenever you get some indecision. But, sometimes that can play to your favour if you're a clever investor. Connor, thanks for that, fella, and have a nice week. Speak next week.
Yeah, you too. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, it's time for top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Lions Gold. Ticker there, Lion. Arr. At four, Varex. V-A-L. At two, by the way, I did buy some Varex. Do your own research. Investments go up and down. But I do see potential here. There's some significant news releases before the end of the year for them. At the moment, they're in the middle of converting the last convertible loan note, or the company they borrowed money off is. And this happens to suppress the share price. So I just think if they convert that before year end and release positive news, we could see a move here. But do your own research in the cancer arena, looking at drugs and compounds to sort out prostate cancer and other parts there, lung cancer. But do your own research. V-A-L, sticker there. At three, most followed, Physiomics, PYC. At two, Tertiary Minerals, TYM. And number one most followed company is Vesarion, BRS. Now, of course, Neil on the podcast today. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Imperial Energy, EME, Dempsey Gas Well Update. At four, Frontera Resources, mobilization of workover rig to Dino 2 well. At three, Highlands Natural Resources, initial production rates for Powell and Wild Horse. At two, Rehobold Resources, investment in Danube Petroleum Limited. And number one, most liked RNS, was from, of course, Vesarion again, VRS. Agreement with global major chemical companies, a Fortune 100 company. And well done to Neil and the team there. They are already pulling these collaborations out of the bag. Now, they just did one with a global consumer brand company and the Israeli aerospace industry. And now they're doing one with a Fortune 100 company. So it's really going gangbusters there for Vesarion. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.